Authorities seized thousands of sacks of sugar from a warehouse in Pampanga in what officials say may be a case of sugar hoarding. Meanwhile, several groups doubt if there really is a sugar shortage in the country. A lawmaker proposes a so-called workers' insurance that will benefit displaced employees. We'll get the side of the Trade Union Congress of the Philippines later on in the program. And 5 billion pesos, that's the additional funding being sought by the Philippine poll body if the 2022 Village and Youth Council elections are postponed. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Our top story at this hour, a raid on a warehouse in San Fernando, Pampanga, yields thousands of sacks of sugar. Customs agents seized the stockpile, which came from Thailand. The raid was conducted amid reports of sugar hoarding as the price of the commodity has spiked in the market. Authorities now investigating if the seized sugar was smuggled into the country. The United Sugar Producers Federation questioning claims of a shortage in refined sugar. Its president, Manuel Lamata, insists there is still some supply left from an earlier batch of imports. He believes supply is not the issue, but overpricing.
Imagine they buy sugar from us at 45 pesos per kilo and they're selling it at 100, 110. The importation of 200,000 metric tons of refined, which came in June of this year, and it's still coming in. That I think there's another batch of 20,000 tons left to be coming in the country. 130,000 plus is still in the bodegas, not withdrawn. DTI should step up to the plate and inspect all sugar mills, all bodegas of the traders.
Former Agriculture Secretary Leonardo Montemayor, meanwhile, believes the Sugar Regulatory Administration consulted with stakeholders before declaring the need to import more supply, but he is not dismissing profiteering behind the rising prices of sugar.
When you look at it on its face value, rising prices would be an indicator, but not the only indicator of a gap between the demand, in this case for sugar, and the supply, whether actual or projected. I think there is also a strong case for the point, I believe, made by Manolet Lamata here, that there is likely profiteering. Ang laki po ng agwat ng buying price for their cane and their raw sugar as against the retail price.
Rising sugar costs prompt bread makers in the Philippines to seek authorization to hike their prices. They're again asking the Trade Department to allow them to raise the price of budget loaf bread, Pinoy Tasty and Pinoy Pandesal, by 4 pesos per pack.
Increase from 38.50 to 42.50 for Pinoy Tasty and from 23.50 to 27.50 for Pinoy Pandesal. It will take them 2 weeks minimum.
Sige. So what is...
Okay naman kami pag pa-September na yung adjustment.
Kami po sa community bakery ay sumususog sa mga kahilingan ng Phil Baking Group bilang nagkakaisang grupo ng mga panadero na sana naman po ay maunawaan sa taas po ng presyo ng asukal, sa presyo po ng ating diesel fuel at LPG, yung operating expenses. May problema po ang mga producer.
The Philippine Confectionery Biscuit and Snacks Association also says their members are having trouble sourcing sugar for their products. The group urges government to make up its mind about importation.
Import talaga. There's really a shortfall. How do you explain yung ganyan price na taas? Kung hindi shortfall yet, ano yan? We need the supply. We need the prices to stabilize. Para din COVID recovery.
Senator J.V. Ejercito welcomes President Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s plan to revamp the Sugar Regulatory Administration. Ejercito hopes the new SRA officials would not depend as much on importing and will instead prioritize helping local farmers. Ejercito says it is because of the agency's importation policies that his law, the Sugarcane Industry Development Act of 2015, failed to achieve its goal.
There's a 2 billion peso fund allotted every year. That fund should have been used for research, for modernization, to put up new sugar mills, to mechanize the farming methods, and to help and to support the yes. sugarcane planters. So that didn't push through, or probably only a small percentage, because as I've said, the agencies, no, yes. government, have been issuing left and right letters of authority to import. The 2 billion fund was reduced to about 700 billion because it was not utilized. So sayang.
Marcos, meanwhile, met with Senate President Juan Miguel Zubiri and other stakeholders in Malacañang Wednesday to discuss the sugar supply woes. Zubiri said the need to import more sugar was acknowledged, but not as much as the 300,000 metric tons earlier proposed. Aside from sugar, supply of white onions here in the Philippines, that's also dwindling. But a farmers group says government should delay any plans to import since there's still enough supply of red onions. Last week, the price of white onions soared to 400 pesos per kilo in some public markets.
Hindi naman din kami against sa importation kung talagang kailangan. Ang pakiutak namin na sana ay maunti lang talaga kung talagang kailangan.
Fast food chain Burger King is among the businesses affected by the shortage of white onions in the country. In other news, a lawmaker has filed a bill seeking unemployment insurance for displaced workers. Under her proposal, Marikina Representative Stella Kimbo wants workers to receive 80% of their salary for up to 3 months after they lose their jobs. Kimbo notes her bill would make job insurance contributions mandatory, but stressed that it provides an important social safety net for laborers.
Sa initial ko po na competitions, ang lalabas po, kung ikaw po ay minimum wage earner at ang take home ay mga 11,000, ang ihuhulog is about 44 pesos per month. So ganun po, kasi 44 sa empleyado, 44 sa employer, and then another 44 sa gobyerno naman. At sa halagang ito, makakatulog ka na ng mahimbing sa gabi. No, parang yun ang binibili mo eh. Hindi po ba? Mm-hmm. So, hindi ka na magkakaroon ng pangamba na baka bukas pagsarang kumpanya mo. Katulad ng mga nangyari ngayong pandemya, no, na mga hindi inasahan na pangyayari at marami pong nawalan ng trabaho.
The bill calls for the creation of a Philippine Job Insurance Corporation similar to state health insurer PhilHealth to oversee the administration of the funds. Well, let's get the side of the workers on this proposal of Congresswoman Kimbo. Joining us now is Luis Coral. He is the Vice President of the Trade Union Congress of the Philippines. Luis, welcome to the program and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us, Carmina.
All right. So when you look at it, the rationale is sound. The reason for the proposed bill, it's really to safeguard the workers here. But how will it be implemented? The money coming from the workers themselves as sort of, I don't know, would you call it forced savings until the time that they need it? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we are looking at the bill from the perspective of what would be the least painful for both the workers and employers. We're in the middle of a recession, and we're looking at a government that's facing huge fiscal problems. If there is a way to minimize the contribution, the pay and costs from employers and employees, it could be through what we would propose as an amendment to the bill, that 10% of all corporate and all business taxes be earmarked for this proposed Philippine Jobs Insurance Corporation. As it is, it proposes a contribution scale based on progressively ladderized income level of each
Correct.
Employer, whether government or private. Our concern is 44 pesos counts for survival concerns of workers. You know, the current contribution rate of a minimum wage earner in NCR or SSS is 560 pesos per month. That's equivalent or less than the 570 pesos minimum wage per day. So that really translates into lost load, less food, and less health care, less provision for their family, and the rent for their rooms and their apartments. So this really has to go through a thorough actuarial study. The intent of the bill is good. The question is, because it becomes mandatory, what will be the cost implications for employees, the workers,
right,
and the employer sector?
Correct. Is it possible then to sort of model it, since we're talking about it anyways, and this has been really the dream of all the candidates during the May elections? They said back then that it's imperative for government to be there for the people when they need it the most. When they lose their jobs, government has to be there and step in. So therefore, is it possible for this administration or even any administration that comes after it to sort of model it after the U.S. model of unemployment pay?
Well, the unemployment model in the U.S. is really based on a huge middle class base, and a huge tax base really creates elbow room.
Right.
Here, we're looking at new proposed taxes on online activities and on single-use plastics. The target is just to raise about 156 billion pesos annually. Hmm. That's really a drop in the bucket when you're looking at the 12.7 trillion debt. So we have to be very creative in terms of creating a preference for those who are actually sacrificing. It has been workers who've been sacrificing for this economy during the lockdown. They only took minimum one time ayuda, which was not sustainable. And what they want are really decent jobs, sustainable jobs. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, the unemployment program really has to be viewed from the perspective of the employment strategy of the government.
Correct.
Who respect the priority that's being given to the restoration of the economy. We are engaging government in its six-year employment strategy. That is key. Now, having said that, those jobs have to be decent jobs. We are warning, and we have warned some of our economic managers of the danger of jobless growth, where the economy will pick up through hot money, through speculation, and the elites become wealthier, but our workers are left behind. President Marcos assured the TUCP, and we stand by that assurance, that rapid industrialization would not leave workers behind. So I hope that this measure of Congresswoman Stella Kimbo, which is well considered, be taken into that, considered in that perspective.
Also,
we are proposing, however, at this time, that this bill include now language to target the 10% of the corporate income taxes be dedicated or earmarked for this Philippine Jobs Unemployment Corporation that she's proposing.
So it's a and good start. It's a good start,
It's
Luis.
A good start. It's an excellent start. But at the end of the day, who picks up the tab?
Correct. Right.
And
another question here is, what if the employment isn't breached? What if employment continues and yet you have that mandatory contribution to the workers' insurance? What happens to that money then?
Well, we had a problem in the last Congress when there was a proposal to create a new provident investment fund. The question is, who manages it? Now, this is a government corporation that's being proposed by Congresswoman Stella Kimbo. So we would assume that it would be judged by the benchmarks of accountability, transparency, and avoidance of graft and corruption. The last proposal in the last Congress really was for a private provident fund manager. So what if they engage in a scam and put the workers' hard-earned money and the employer's contribution into high-risk ventures? What if that boom busts? Who picks up the tab then? There is no insurance once the insurance system or a provident fund fails. It's a chicken and egg question. Mm-hmm. The Philippine Jobs Insurance Corporation that's being proposed should have stakeholder representation. Its board should be composed of employers. It should be composed of workers' representatives, because it's their money that's actually being put into the the unemployment insurance program.
And so therefore, Luis, when you think about it, is it less riskier to sort of just earmark the revenue from certain taxes to pay for the the unemployment of these workers? And we're not also talking about disability here. Do you think that disability should also be included here?
Well, there is a proposed bill coming from the UP College of Law that is also comprehensive. It tries to tie up the Employees' Compensation Commission, Pag-IBIG, PhilHealth, GSIS, and SSS into addressing certain issues, such as the continuing threat of the pandemic. Now, if there is a continuance of the pandemic and you get COVID and you lose and you utilize all your sick leave, are you going to pay out of pocket? Does the worker pay out of pocket if he gets monkeypox and has a 30-day quarantine leave and his sick leave is only 6 days and his accrued incentive leave is only 5 days? So for the next 20 days, it's out of pocket that he pays for an illness that he did not want to get, for an illness that he probably got because he had to take public transportation, because we're now work at site, at work at our offices. Mm. Now, there has to be some kind of social protection prioritization to be given. And Congresswoman Kimbo has really established that there is a need for a stronger unemployment insurance program. Mm-hmm. Now, you said the risk. The risk is always who manages the fund. Mm-hmm. So
that is if we follow that model.
Yes.
For there to be a fund instead of earmarking revenue.
There are other alternatives, Carmina, aside from the proposal.
Go ahead.
Why not just tweak the existing SSS program? Increase its funding so that its actuarials are made solid, and you remove some of the qualification or tweak the qualification requirements. Mm. For example, I'm more than 60. I'm disqualified if I lose my job tomorrow from the unemployment fund of SSS. Mm-mm. Remove that because I'm still actively working like many other Filipino seniors. Tweak the contribution level. You must have 36 months contribution before you can qualify for unemployment. Mm-mm. So that's a way of actually protecting the fund. And it's really based on actuarial study. But perhaps if 10% of corporate income taxes could be set aside for both the GSIS and the SSS, then well and good. Mm. That would address the need to build up and shore up the faltering actuarials of both funds. Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you say then to workers who might think, why is it going to come from me? Why do I have to be the one to shell out the money? Even if it's just 44 pesos, that's 44 pesos that could go into probably maintenance meds of my parents or additional expenditure for the kids who are still going to school. What do you say to that concern?
Hindi dapat siguro manggaling sa pockets ng ating manggagawa yung additional contribution. Hindi napapanahon yung additional contribution na yan. At hindi nararapat na magkaroon din ng increased contribution yung ating mga employers at the time when they're trying to rebuild the economy. You know, there are ways of using funds that can be generated through taxes. Perhaps a fund could be created to provide loans to small and medium enterprises, and the condition for those loans, preferential low-cost loans, would be to retain existing workers in the workforce and to hire new workers to address the high unemployment and underemployment numbers we're facing right now.
But as you said, Luis, it's a good start. The intent is there. It's a good start. It can only go forward with all the suggestions coming from groups such as yours and also other workers groups. But we're going to have to leave it at that. We've just ran out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Luis Corral. He is the Vice President of the Trade Union Congress of the Philippines. Interesting discussion we just had right there. Thanks, Luis. Take care and keep safe.
Have a good day. Thank you.
You too. Right, from there, we're going to take a break now. Up ahead, the Commission on Elections says it would need billions of pesos in additional funding if the postponement of the Village and Youth Council polls pushes through. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. Back here, still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Authorities seized thousands of sacks of sugar from a warehouse in Pampanga in what officials say may be a case of sugar hoarding. Meanwhile, several groups doubt if there really is a sugar shortage in the country. A lawmaker proposes a so-called workers' insurance that will benefit displaced employees. The Trade Union Congress of the Philippines welcomes the proposal but says it should be studied further to make it less painful for both workers and employers. And 5 billion pesos, that's the additional funding being sought by the Philippine poll body if the 2022 Village and Youth Council elections are postponed. Back with more news, the Rural Missionaries of the Philippines condemns the indictment of several of its members for alleged terrorist financing, calling it rabid red tagging. Mike Navalu now joins us with details. Mike.
Samina Atrocities National NGO has pushed back against the terrorism financing charges filed against some of its members, saying that one of the officers was only forced to testify in Spain to condemn her arrested brother. The Rural Missionaries of the Philippines said in a press statement that one of two allegedly former rebels.
Sorry, Mike. We're going to have to call you right back. Your line is coming in choppy. Please keep your line open as our producers try to contact you again. Moving on. After flagging deficiencies in the health department's COVID response, state auditors zero in on irregularities in the agency's programs outside the health crisis. Adrian Ayalin has that story for us.
In the 2021 audit report on the Department of Health not pertaining to specific programs such as anti-COVID-19 efforts, state auditors noted deficiencies in transactions such as improper computation of the approved budget for the contract, use of improper procurement modality, deficiencies in procurement planning, and lack of documentation. The audit report, however, stated that the DOH agreed to the recommendation of the audit team to direct the heads of concerned offices to instruct their respective bids and awards committees and procurement units to strictly comply with the requirements of the law. The DOH also agreed to impose the proper liquidated damages to contractors and suppliers for delayed delivery and completion of procured goods, services, and infrastructure projects to encourage faithful adherence and timely execution of contracts. The audit team likewise noted the transaction documents for procurements with a total amount of 5.829 billion pesos were not submitted for audit. According to the audit report, the DOH also agreed to the recommendation of the audit team that the heads of accounting and budget offices and other concerned agencies to submit all the unsubmitted financial reports and transaction documents. Irregular expenditures were also noted by the audit team, particularly disbursements in Region 5 totaling 1.34 million pesos, which were not in compliance with established rules and guidelines. The DOH, for its part, agreed to the recommendation of the audit team to cause the refund of the amounts and ensure future transactions comply with pertinent laws and rules. On the welfare of health workers, the audit team also urged the DOH management to adequately monitor the monthly minimum net take-home of employees after a total of 79 employees received take-home pay ranging from 20 to 4,998 pesos below the minimum 5,000 requirement after deductions from financial obligations from both government and private lending institutions. The DOH said that it will strictly observe the mandatory monthly minimum take-home pay threshold. DOH Officer in Charge Maria Rosario Verhere has earlier said that they still have 60 days to respond to the audit report. Adrian Ayalin, ABS-CBN News.
With just days to go before face-to-face classes resume, a teachers group says the Education Department has yet to address several issues hounding the opening of the new school year. The Alliance of Concerned Teachers says there is no word yet if the request for health workers to be stationed at schools has been approved or not. A classroom shortage could also be a problem.
Sa pinaka-face-to-face, sa bahagi ng mga teachers, sa tingin namin, no, mas magiging okay ito kaysa dun sa distance learning na pinatupad natin. Mas makakapagturo ng maayos, mas magagampanan ng mga guro yung kanilang yung aming responsibilidad, no, sa ating kabataang Pilipina. Dalawang taon tayong sumabak sa ilalim ng isang remote distance learning program. At nakita naman natin sa dalawang taon na ito ay terribly under attack yung rights ng mga teachers natin, no? Sa usapin ng labor.
Another teachers group dismayed by the lack of response to the request for a school break extension.
No, yung ating mga teacher po medyo sa totoong buhay po dismayado, no, dahil hindi nga po napagbigyan, no, yung pagpapalawig ng school break, no, na ayon, yeah, naman sa batas ay kinakailangan naman ding ibigay sa amin yung dalawang buwan, no. Although may mga pending pa rin po, no, na usapan kami sa central office, no, kung paano ito aayusin. Nevertheless, no, sabi nga naman po namin makakaasa naman yung ating mga magulang at yung mga bata na hindi namin sila bibiguin.
And Mike Navarro is back on the line for that update on the tariff financing charges slapped against members of the Rural Missionaries of the Philippines. Mike.
Carmina, a church-based national NGO has hit back against the terrorism financing charges filed against some of its members, claiming that one of the accusers was only forced to testify in exchange for the freedom of her arrested mother. The Rural Missionaries of the Philippines said in a press statement that one of two allegedly former rebels was forced to execute a spurious statement accusing RMP members of channeling funds to the CPP-NPA because authorities supposedly arrested her mother. No additional details were given as to when, where, or how this happened, or who were involved in the supposed arrest. But RMP claims that this is part of government's counterinsurgency program, where those who allegedly surrendered were used to link legal democratic organizations to the CPP-NPA while lining the pockets of corrupt officials in the process. Some of RMP's members, including four nuns, were charged with violating Section 8.2 of Republic Act 1168, or the Terrorism Financing Prevention and Suppression Act of 2012. The provision punishes anyone who makes available any property or funds or financial services to persons or groups identified or designated as terrorists, with jail time ranging from 12 years to 40 years in jail, and a fine of between 500,000 pesos to 1 million pesos. An allegedly former finance officer of RMP in its Northern Mindanao region chapter allegedly claimed 60% of RMP's funds for its projects goes to the CPP-NPA, which have been designated by the Anti-Terrorism Council as terrorist groups in December 2020. In the same statement, RMP denied this allegation, saying that all its projects are well documented, reported and accounted for, and complied with requirements in securing funds for their projects, including audits. RMP has provided service to the rural poor for 53 years. It claimed that the demonization of RMP's work has negatively affected their various ministries. The group also expressed concern over the safety of those charged. Two have already been jailed, according to the group, supposedly on trumped-up charges. The group also said that even before the passage of the anti-terrorism law in 2020, RMP has been red-tagged and vilified, citing several instances. It accused the Marcos government of using the same playbook as his predecessor in demonizing legal democratic organizations such as RMP, the rabid and legal red-tagging weaponization of the law, and impunity for human rights violations. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Mike Navalio there joining us on the line. And back here in the newsroom, the Commission on Elections would need at least 5 billion pesos in additional funding if the 2022 Village and Youth Council elections are postponed. That's according to COMELEC Chairman George Garcia. He said postponing the elections would mean additional expenses to register more voters, produce more ballots, and procure additional equipment. A House panel approved on Tuesday a proposal to delay the polls in December for a year.
Kapag po na-postpone ang SKN barangay election, kakapusin na po kami o kapus po kami doon sa initial na nabigay. Sapagkat tatandaan po namin, yung pong nakalaan sa amin na nasa aming pondo ngayon, ay yan po ay pang December 2022. Hmm. Pag po tayo ay nagpaliban ng eleksyon, magpapa-continuing registration muli kami. Nakiusap po kami sa kanila na kung pwede, ay malaman po namin yung desisyon talaga kung tutuloy o hindi bago man po matapos sana ang Agosto, sapagkat hopefully po, opo, kung sakasakali tayo makakapag-print ng balota para sa December 2022 ng September up to the middle of October.
The Gawa Jesse Robredo has been relaunched on the 10th death anniversary of the former Interior Secretary. The award recognizes mayors who are models for leadership. Our very own Wena Cos now joins us with details. Wena, what more can you tell us?
Yes, Carmina, the 10th death anniversary of former Interior Secretary Jesse M. Robredo was commemorated with the relaunch of Gawa Jesse M. Robredo at the museum in his name in Naga City on Thursday. The award recognizes mayors who embody leadership that is matino, mahusay, at may puso from various cities and municipalities in the Philippines. Gawa Jesse M. Robredo was first launched by the Jesse Robredo Foundation in 2019, but had difficulty to continue due to the pandemic. Prior to the relaunch, former Vice President Attorney Lenny Robredo and her daughters Aika, Tresha, and Jillian visited his memorial where his ashes are buried at Eternal Gardens in Balatas, Naga City, where local government officials and the Liberal Party offered wreaths. Attorney Lenny Robredo posted photos remembering her late husband of 25 years on her Instagram with the caption, 10 years without Jesse. The 10th commemoration book of Jesse's legacy titled Diez was also launched during the program. August 18 was declared a special working holiday in 2015 under Republic Act 10669 to commemorate the late Robredo's legacy. In Naga City, however, today is a special non-working holiday. Robredo was known for his chinelas leadership that targeted rural grassroots for poverty alleviation and good governance that earned him a Ramon Magsaysay Award in 2000. He was the first Filipino mayor to receive the award. He served as Naga City Mayor for 6 terms. His 10th death anniversary was commemorated with simultaneous events in Naga City, which he called his Maugmang Lugar, or Happy Place, and in Manila at the Ateneo de Manila College Chapel. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Wena Cos, there joining us on the line. Take care, Wena. All right, we're going to take another break now. Still ahead, China bakes under a heat wave. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. News. National Security Advisor Clarita Carlos visits Pag-asa Island in the West Philippine Sea. Pag-asa is part of the Kalayaan group of islands being claimed by China. This despite an arbitration court ruling in 2016 that favors the Philippines. China, however, continues to be aggressive and previously protested visits of high-ranking Philippine officials to the island. Carlos's visit to Pag-asa Island comes as Chinese Ambassador Wang Xilian paid a courtesy call on President Marcos Wednesday. Malacanang has yet to give details of that meeting. China is set to send its troops to Russia for joint military drills. The exercises will take place from August 30 to September 5. Other countries, including India and Belarus, are also taking part. Beijing's defense ministry, however, says its participation is unrelated to the current international and regional situation. Earlier this week, China launched fresh military drills around Taiwan following recent visits of U.S. lawmakers. Russia, on the other hand, is at war with Ukraine. Still in China, authorities there take measures to conserve power and water amid the country's worst heat wave in decades. In Sichuan province, factories have been ordered to shut down from 10 in the evening to 10 in the morning to relieve pressure on the power grid. China's National Observatory has so far issued over 24 red alerts, the highest in its 4-tier warning system, as several regions bake in temperatures exceeding 40 degrees Celsius. Global monkeypox cases see a significant increase. Rafael Bosano now joins us to tell us more about this. Raf, what more can you tell us?
Carmina, the number of monkeypox cases globally has increased by 20% in the last week. This is according to WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus. Last week, it says that 7,500 new cases were reported, bringing the cumulative number of cases to over 35,000 from 92 countries. The health official says almost all cases continue to be reported among men who have sex with men, which, quote, underscores the importance for all countries to design and deliver services and information tailored to these communities that protect health, human rights, and dignity. He says that the primary focus of countries must be to ensure that they are ready for the virus and stop transmission by using public health tools like disease surveillance, contact tracing, and a tailored risk communication, community engagement, and risk reduction measures. Like other viral diseases, monkeypox can be controlled through vaccines, something which Ghebreyesus says is in high demand but limited in supply. He says the WHO is in close contact with vaccine manufacturers and countries who are willing to share the doses. But Dr. Rosamund Lewis, WHO's technical lead for monkeypox, reminds people that vaccines are not silver bullets, which is why it remains important for individuals to take necessary precautions like reducing their number of sexual partners and avoiding group or casual sex. But experts also note that sexual contact is not the only way to transmit the virus. Should individuals receive a vaccine against monkeypox, Lewis says they need to wait at least 2 weeks to reach the peak of generating an immune response. The Philippines announced its first case of monkeypox last July 29. The patient has since recovered and finished isolation, while 10 close contacts did not report any symptoms and have also finished isolation last August 16. Carmina, back to you.
Thanks a lot, Raf. Take care and keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, the World Health Organization calls on people infected with monkeypox to avoid exposing animals to the virus. That's after the medical journal, The Lancet, reported last week the first case of human-to-dog transmission in Paris. The WHO warns while the transmission of the virus to a dog is not unusual, it is concerned that this could lead to a mutation.
Clearly, in this particular case, with the transmission to a dog in a closed domestic setting, with having one animal infected is not unusual. It's not unexpected that would happen. What we don't want to see happen is disease moving from one species to the next and then remaining in that species as a species, moving around within a new species, because that's when a virus can adapt to that new species. And in adapting to that new species, it is incentivized to evolve as such.
In business, investors are bracing for the latest policy decision of the Philippine Central Bank. BSP Governor Felipe Medalla has hinted today's rate hike would either be 25 or 50 basis points, and he's not ruling out further tightening to tame inflation back within the central bank's 2-4% target range starting next year.
I already said, not zero, not 75, right? So, it's probably more than a coin cost. But I will not say which side of the coin is heavier. As to whether there will be more rate hikes, the remaining meetings, we will not rule them out because, as you know, we want the midpoint of the forecast for next year to be below 4. And midpoint of the forecast for 2024 to be closer, as close to 3 as possible.
The U.S. Federal Reserve also remains committed to hiking rates, but policymakers agree the pace could ease soon. In the minutes of the Fed's July meeting, the central bank said it would take some time to bring what it called an unacceptably high inflation in the U.S. back to its 2% target. They also signaled they would raise rates as high as necessary, even as they began to acknowledge the risk they might go too far and curb economic activity. The Fed has lifted its benchmark overnight interest rate by 225 basis points, or make that points this year, which included back-to-back 75 basis point hikes to tame inflation. Law experts see nothing wrong with the partnership deal of media giants ABS-CBN and TV5. University of Makati School Law Dean or School of Law Dean Jay Layug says TV5 did not violate anything when it allowed ABS-CBN, which does not have a franchise, to acquire its shares.
Walang problema dun sa nangyari, no? Ang entity na may prangkisa dito, yung TV5.
Yes.
No? Wala ko siyang binayulate. Alam nyo, lahat naman ng business kumukuha ng investor ng kapital. No? Itong pagsanipwersa nila, although tinatawag nating joint venture, is simply an acquisition of shares. Usually, kailangan ng approval ng gobyerno kung may merger, which is not this case, the UTE merger, or kung nilipat niya yung controlling interest niya, no, to another entity. Magkano ba binili ng ABS? Eh, nasa 30% lang po. So walang control po na nalipat.
Corporate lawyer Domingo Cayosa, for his part, believes the landmark deal does not harm competition in the industry.
Ang importante, ano bang epekto sa merkado, sa industriya?
Correct.
Ako naman tayong nakikita na monopolya o kaya undue advantage yung dalawa. Hindi nga nagko-complain yung ibang mga media outlets, di ho ba? Gauge mo yan sa industriya kung may nagsasabi na ba, mukhang sila na lang, wala nang natitira.
The House Committee on Legislative Franchises will tackle the landmark deal this afternoon. ABS-CBN is the parent firm of this news channel. A low-pressure area has been spotted west-southwest of Calayan, Cagayan. Pag-asa forecaster Veronica Torres now joins us with the latest on the weather. Veronica, over to you.
Good afternoon to you and to all of our listeners. Earlier at 11 a.m. today, we issued a second weather advisory for the low-pressure area and southwest monsoon. And earlier at 10 a.m. today, the low-pressure area that we're monitoring was estimated based on all available data at 355 kilometers west-southwest of Calayan, Cagayan, or 220 kilometers west of Lawag City, Ilocos Norte. This weather disturbance remains less likely to develop into a tropical cyclone within the next 24 hours. Then in the next 24 hours, this LPA, or low-pressure area, and the southwest monsoon will bring light to moderate with at times heavy rains over Ilocos Region, Cordillera Administrative Region, Zambales, and Cagayan. For Metro Manila and the rest of the country, the weather condition is partly cloudy to cloudy skies with isolated rain showers and thunderstorms. Also today, we don't have any gale warning raised at any part of our country. And that's the latest for our weather from Bagasa Weather Forecasting Section, Veronica Torres.
Thanks a lot, Veronica, to you and the rest of the team there. Thanks for all that you do. Back here in the newsroom, in sports, LeBron James will be a Los Angeles Laker for the foreseeable future. The two sides agreed on a two-year contract extension worth $97.1 million with a player option for a third season. The new deal makes a four-time MVP the highest-earning player in NBA history, racking up $532 million in guaranteed salary. LeBron has made it known he wants to play his final season alongside his son, Bronny, who is eligible for the NBA draft in 2024. Filipino pole vaulter EJ Obiena formally reinstated to the national team. The Philippine Athletic Track and Field Association endorsed Obiena's inclusion along with five other athletes. Obiena had a falling out with the previous PATAFA leadership over alleged misuse of funds. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. Well, switching gears now, the coming-of-age Netflix series Never Have I Ever has made a star out of its lead actress. ABS-CBN Hollywood correspondent Yong Chavez tells us her story.
What the hell?
Never Have I Ever star Maitri Ramakrishnan says her life changed in ways that she did not even dream of when she was chosen to play the show's central character, Devi Vishwakumar.
I get to find out what I love to do with my life, and that's acting. I know so many people don't necessarily know what they want to do with the rest of their lives, like at such a young age, and I've been very blessed to know what I want, you know?
Do you recall your first day on set, and how did you feel?
Yes, I do recall my first day on set. I will never forget. We were filming the scene where Davey is saying, I have chosen attainable yet status-enhancing boyfriends for each of us today. Fabiola, you're going to date Alex Gomez. I remember the whole scene. I just remember feeling so excited. I was speaking so fast. Lang Fisher, the co-creator with Mindy, came up to me and was like, okay, that was great. Just slow it down. Just take a breath. It's unbelievable
that we're together. The actress also shares what she learned from her character's story.
The biggest lesson that I have learned is that self-respect, learning my worth and valuing myself as a person. I tend to be very hard on myself, very critical of myself. And because I'm a perfectionist that always tries to do the best she possibly can without any mess ups, when I do mess up, I get really, really hard on myself. So I guess what I'm learning is trying to remember that it's human to make mistakes.
The actress adds that her character's growth also mirrors her own.
Season 3 of Never Have I Ever is now streaming globally on Netflix. Yong Chavez, ABS-CBN News, here in Hollywood.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Consentino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.